It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
We're back with another 90 minutes of great old-time radio for you on the weekly download from the Radio Theater Channel. We're going to start off with a presentation of Romance and Last Summer's Love from 1955.
Now, from Hollywood, Romance. Did you ever fall in love at a summer resort? Madly, wildly, devotedly in love? Well, you've missed something if you haven't. And if you have, then you'll know the summer magic that Candy and Doug share in our story. So now, with Joyce McCluskey as Candy and John Daner as Doug, we bring you transcribed Kathleen Height's delightful story, Last Summer's Love.
It just came in this morning's mail. Let me read it to you. Are you coming to Clear Lake again this year? We're holding the same accommodations for you as you had last summer, because we're sure you'll want to recapture the thrill of boating on the lake, riding the wooded trails surrounding it, dancing at the pavilion, meeting the gang at the lodge. Everything you loved about Clear Lake is still here, waiting for you. I wonder if it is, because last year...
Candy, come out here this minute!
Don't you think it'd be better if I finished dressing first?
Oh, I don't think it matters. Hurry up, you'll just die.
Not on the first day of my vacation, I won't. I refuse to. Oh, Sue. Isn't it beautiful?
Beautiful?
I do believe it's bluer than it was on the brochure they sent us.
Oh, you're talking about the lake. Well, it's nice, too.
Too?
Over this way. Look.
Oh, the dock?
What's on the dock?
All I see is a couple of fellows with fishing poles getting out of a motorboat.
That's all you have to see. In fact, I didn't even waste time on the fishing poles and motorboat. Two fellas.
Well, what's the matter with you? Didn't you know they come in pairs or something?
Where'd you put the binoculars?
Don't be silly. You can tell from here that they're both tall. One of them has red hair. Mm. The other has light hair, and he's terribly tanned. And those white trunks he's wearing. They're in the top drawer of the chest.
Huh?
The binoculars.
You know something wonderful?
Not yet.
That's our dock, too. Remember the man at the lodge said that there was a dock for every two cabins and each one had a canoe and a motorboat?
That's right, he did. Mm-hmm. Oh, now look, Sue. Sure you don't think we ought to go down there now. I mean, what on earth would they think? We may have set a new track record down the trail to the dock. Maybe it was the mountain air or the high holiday mood of our vacation. Because, honestly, Sue and I aren't usually what you'd call forward. Generally speaking, we're much more subtle. For instance, the fact that I turned my ankle and sprawled headlong onto the dock was the purest of coincidences.
Oh, Candy, how awful! Are you hurt?
I don't know. It doesn't feel very good.
Hey, that looked like a bad one.
Can we give you a hand?
Oh, my goodness. And we had no idea anyone was within miles of us.
Well, you were running like someone was holding a clock on you. You always run that fast?
Only when we're after something special.
Wouldn't you like to get up?
I don't know. I was beginning to feel quite at home down here.
Oh, my goodness, Candy, are you still down there? I'd almost forgotten all about you.
Here, I'll help you up.
Oh, it sort of hurts. On this one ankle, my right one.
Just don't put any weight on it. Lean against me. That's right. Well, there you go.
Thanks. Thanks very much.
Do you think you can stand on it?
Well, I can try.
You got a couple of skinned knees there, too.
I guess I do.
Oh, Candy, I'm so sorry.
Look, I better get these fish up on ice and take the rest of the gear up to the cabin. You look after the little lady, Doug.
I'll bring my stuff along later.
Why, you'll do no such thing. My goodness, if you're going to be kind enough to stay here and help Candy, the very least I can do is help him carry things.
You don't have to do that.
Yes, she does.
I want to. Really, I wouldn't feel right if I didn't.
She means that.
Well, okay, if you want to. That'll be swell. If you can manage the rods and Doug's sweatshirt, I'll handle the rest of the stuff.
Have you tried putting your weight on it yet?
Huh?
The ankle.
Oh, no. I guess I haven't. Let's see now.
Oh, hurts, huh?
Just a little. A little shooting pain, you know.
Well, let's see now. Does that hurt?
Oh, just a little tender there.
How about that?
No, not especially.
Well, it isn't broken anyway.
Oh, that's nice.
I really think it's just twisted a little.
My, you're brown. I mean, you must have been up here a long time to get a tan like that.
Just about 10 days. I tan pretty easily. Poor old Brick, all he does is sunburn and peel. Brick's the one who went up to the cabin with your friend.
Sue.
She called you Candy.
Mm-hmm. He called you Doug.
You doing anything special tonight?
Well, no. Well, you see, we just got here today, and... No, I'm not doing anything special.
Good. You soak that foot, then. Keep the water just as hot as you can stand it, and give it a good soaking, huh?
As I lurched up the trail to our cabin, quite alone, I told myself that I should be grateful for his concern, that it showed that he was a man of fine instincts, a man of feeling. I told myself a lot of things, but it was no use. I wasn't listening. For all I knew, Sue had moved in with Doug and Brick. I didn't see her again till late afternoon.
Oh, Candy, honey, I've simply been worried sick about you.
Ho, ho.
Really? I told the boys I couldn't stay another minute until I knew you were all right.
Bully for you.
We all think you're being terribly sensible.
You and the boys?
Mm-hmm. Staying off your feet this way. Candy, you're not the teeniest little bit disturbed with me, are you? I mean, we all thought you ought to rest.
Silly girl, of course I'm not the teeniest little bit disturbed. I am livid.
With me? Why on earth?
Oh. Well, not with you exactly. With me, I guess. I feel like a fool sprinting down that path with the speed of light landing on my chin.
You'll love what Doug said about it. Honestly, he's the funniest thing.
I'll bet I don't love it.
He said he'd never had a girl fall for him so hard. Isn't that a scream?
I'm completely convulsed.
Candy, you gotta help me.
Why?
Well, I don't know quite how it all happened, but the boys, Brick and Doug, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they were talking about how tired they are of eating just plain old fried trout every night, and I found myself saying that I knew the most perfectly divine sauce for trout. And then, of course, they said, well, why didn't I have dinner with them, fixing the sauce, of course, and I said I'd just run over here and gather up a few ingredients.
Well, go ahead. Gather them up.
Oh, Candy, you know very well I don't know the first thing about the most perfectly divine sauce for trout.
Oh? Don't you, Sue?
Outside of scalloped potatoes, I can't cook my hat. Candy, you will help me out, won't you? You know I'd do anything for you. I mean, if you were in over your head this way.
Gave her a sauce recipe. Now that I look back on it, I don't suppose it was really a very nice thing to do, but I wasn't feeling very nice that day. I myself dined alone on poached eggs, slept perfectly well the entire night. Even my ankle was much improved the next morning, and as I sat sunning myself on the dock, I reflected on the fact that there's a little of Lucretia Borgia in every woman.
Oh, it can't be.
Well, it couldn't possibly be.
Morning.
Hello.
How's that for a string of trout?
Oh, it's wonderful. Well, you must have gone out awfully early.
Yeah, I did. Felt kind of rocky. all night. So I figured if I couldn't sleep, I might as well get up and fish.
Did you feel awfully bad?
Just rocky. I haven't checked Brick, but how's Sue feeling? We all ate the same thing.
I know. And I just feel terrible about it.
Well, you shouldn't. It wasn't your fault.
Oh, but it was. I don't know what came over me, but...
Well, you weren't even there.
Only in spirit.
How's the ankle feeling?
Oh, it's fine. It's really just fine.
You know, I sure admire what you did last night.
Huh?
Yeah. You stayed home and soaked your foot. That's what you should have done. A lot of gals would have been foolish about it, but you handled it just right.
You think so?
Makes me think a lot more of you.
I'm glad. But I don't deserve it. I mean, you're thinking nice things about me and all.
If you feel like it, I wish you'd have dinner with me tonight.
Dinner?
Yeah. Only we won't go to the same place we all went to last night.
But I thought... Didn't you fix the trout at your cabin with that special sauce?
Didn't Sue tell you? Well, I guess maybe she was mad at Brick and me, but she took so long with all those wild ingredients, we just told her to forget the sauce. Well, we all went down to Luigi's for spaghetti.
We'll return to romance and our story, Last Summer's Love, in just a moment. Today on CBS Radio's Gunsmoke, hear the remarkable story of Uncle Oliver. United States Marshal Matt Dillon meets Uncle Oliver today on most of these same stations. And now for the second act of Romance.
Funny. It wasn't the moonlight on Clear Lake or the romantic setting of the pine-capped mountains that brought Doug and me together. Just one twisted ankle and three light touches of ptomaine. Dinner that night was something I'll never forget. I don't think anything is more exciting than those first times together when you're beginning to fall in love.
I guess I should have told you not to dress up. Nobody does up here. Anything you wear fishing is fine for anything else you do.
I like that. Makes it more of a vacation, more of a change. You've been coming up here for a long time?
Ever since I was a kid. Used to come up with the folks then. When I got a little bit older, I'd take summer jobs up here just so I could spend the summers the way I liked it best.
What kind of jobs?
Oh, a little bit of everything. I worked for the stable several summers, gave riding lessons, and I'd take a crowd out along the trails for steak fries.
Sounds wonderful.
You like to ride?
Well, I like the idea of horseback riding. I really don't know much about it. Just once or twice at summer camp. I don't get much chance to ride in the city.
You don't get much chance to live either, or breathe, or get close to anything that's important. I don't like cities.
Don't you live in one?
Not for very long at a time. I'll take a job anywhere, so long as I can be out of doors.
I don't think I've ever met anyone just like you. I mean, most of the fellas I meet and the ones I grew up with, they're all in insurance or brokerage houses or maybe law firms.
Yeah, the Sunday golf crowd. I know.
Handball, too, on their lunch hours.
Yeah. Well, they can have it.
They surely can. I don't know why I'm talking so big. I work in an insurance office.
Well, it's different for a girl. You're probably just working to fill in the time until... Did he get married?
I probably am.
There's nothing wrong with that, Candy.
Filling in the time or getting married?
Well, I was thinking more about filling in the time, but I guess there's nothing wrong with getting married.
A lot of people do.
Yeah. A lot of people I know are married.
Some of my... best friends are.
Candy, would you let me teach you to ride?
It wasn't the most important question anyone had ever asked me, but it sounded like it at the time. All the time we were talking, and it certainly wasn't a very inspired conversation. I kept thinking what a wonderful-looking person he was. His plaid shirt open at the throat, his well-weathered Levi's. Everything about him was fresh and clean and crisp.
He looked like a John Whitcomb drawing of a bronze, blue-eyed, typical American young man. The kind you never see. But there he was. Doug taught me to ride and fish, and we swam and went on long hikes. And just when I thought it could never end, it had to.
This is it, Candy. This is the spot.
Oh, I thought we were lost. You left the trail way back there.
Oh, I don't need any trail to come up here. Come on. I want to show you. There.
Oh, it's high, isn't it? Oh, it must be the top of the world.
The top of mine, anyway. Come on, out to the point.
Oh, Doc. It's... There aren't any words for it.
I've never found any.
It's like... Nothing down there was important.
Nothing is.
Oh, is that the lake? That tiny thimble full of water?
You can't even see the lodge or the villages. They're too small.
How long have you been coming up here?
I don't know. I was about 10, I guess, first time I found it. That time I was lost. After that, it just sort of became my spot.
Why do you ever leave?
Sometimes I think I won't. Then I'm afraid if I stay too long, it'll just lose something for me. I like it just the way it is.
I think I understand.
Candy, I don't know if it matters. I've never brought anyone up here before.
It matters.
Funny, I didn't intend to bring you. I mean, I didn't even think about it till we started to ride this morning. Pretty soon, I knew where I was headed.
I hope you're not sorry. I hope you don't think of me as an intruder.
It seems just right, your being here. Candy. Candy.
It seems just right to me, too.
Let's not go back.
Back?
Brick and Sue, they were talking about a picnic tonight and then going over to the pavilion to dance.
Well, that's right. They were. Big farewell evening.
I don't like farewells. I don't want to think about tomorrow when you go. I just want to be with you today. Here.
And he was. And I'm quite sure there was never a day like it. Doug had brought food. We'd planned to have lunch and swim on the far side of the lake, but we settled for cold baked beans and beer, and sunning ourselves on the warm rocks of the point. And we never once talked of goodbye or anything beyond our day together until late that night at the door of the cabin.
You must be tired. I guess it's pretty late.
I'm not tired, and I don't care how late it is. Do you want to come in for a while?
No. There's no sense stretching it out, Candy. Won't make it any easier.
Just longer. I wish it were all just beginning, Doug. I wish tomorrow was the first day of my vacation.
Yeah. Well, I guess you gotta go, though. No chance of staying on a while?
No. I don't suppose you ever get to Kansas City.
Never have yet. Now, maybe. Look, I'll write you, huh? You send me your address, and I'll write you.
Doug, wait.
I'll see you, Candy.
I cried a little. Neither Sue nor I said anything much on the way home early the next day. Back in Kansas City, I saw the fellas I knew in the insurance and brokerage houses and law firms. And they talked about their Sunday golf games and handball on their lunch hours. I wrote letters to Doug and waited frantically for the mail. And the time passed. It was September and October. Mr. Beamer's office.
I'd like to speak to Miss Candy Winters, please.
This is she.
Oh, I thought so. Hi.
Doug?
Yeah.
But where are you?
Downstairs.
But you never come to Kansas City.
I'm here now. Look, are you busy for lunch?
No. I can leave early. I can come now, Doug.
I'm just downstairs.
Don't move a muscle.
How do you manage to keep looking so tan? I thought you'd be all faded out by now.
Well, I play golf on Sundays.
Oh.
It's really been quite a nice fall here. Warm and sunny. Doug, have you been sick?
No, been feeling fine.
But you're so pale. Maybe it's just lighting in here.
I guess I've lost a lot of my tan, all right. I always do in the winter.
I just thought you were always terribly tan.
Not in the winter.
No. Well, most people aren't.
No, not most people. Well, you're wearing a suit.
Yes, I am. I usually wear suits to the office.
It's nice. I just never saw you anything like that before.
No, well, the lake, it was different.
Yeah, it was.
You're wearing a suit, too.
Yeah, I am.
Is that a hand-painted necktie?
Yeah, it is. Cost $15. You like it?
Well, it's certainly colorful. Say that for it. Oh, what do you hear from Brick?
Oh, not much. He's stuck in San Francisco, some dull advertising job. How about Sue?
Well, she's fine. What brings you to Kansas City anyway?
Well, my work, really. I'm selling encyclopedias now.
Sounds interesting.
Well, it's outdoor work, you know. That is, I'm out more than I am indoors. You have a set of encyclopedias?
Oh, yes. Yes, 24 of them.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness, look at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot. I'm supposed to be back for some terribly important dictation exactly of 3 minutes.
Oh, hey, then. You run along, because, tell you the truth, I've got an appointment, too.
Well, it's been awfully nice, Doug.
Yeah, same here. Sure, it's great to see you again.
And if you're ever passing through town again...
You bet. I sure will.
Romance is produced and directed by Norman McDonald, with editorial supervision by Het Mannheim. You have heard Last Summer's Love, specially written for Romance by Kathleen Height, starring Joyce McCluskey with John Daner. Featured in the cast were Gene Bates and Vic Perrin. This is Joe Walters inviting you to hear Romance, transcribed next week at this same time. When you go away to the beach or go riding in the car, radio is ready, willing, and able to follow right along. You can take CBS Radio with you wherever you go this summer. Stay tuned now for Gunsmoke, which follows immediately over most of these same stations.
From July 9th of 1955, Romance and Last Summer's Love. Well, now we're going to move into some hard-hitting Federal Action with This Is Your FBI and the Flying Felon. This comes from 1123 of 51.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society presents This Is Your FBI. This is your FBI, the official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Presented transcribed as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community. Tonight, the subject of our FBI file, counterfeiting. Its title, The Flying Felon.
One of the byproducts of World War II was an increase of juvenile delinquents. Some of those young men and women have been rehabilitated, but too many haven't. In too many cases, your FBI sees the juvenile delinquent of yesterday becoming the hardened criminal of today. They are providing recruits for the formation of gangs reminiscent in many respects of the gangs of the 20s and 30s. Real reduction in present-day crime rates will not come until every adult recognizes his responsibilities to youth and his job as a citizen. In these days of uncertainty, the American people must realize one important fact. If we are to be strong internally, every effort must be directed toward the goal of making the younger element of the nation more law-abiding. And that effort must come not only from your FBI, but primarily from you. Tonight's file opens at the FBI field office in a large Midwestern city. Special Agent Jim Taylor has just entered the office of Supervisor Leo Sherman.
Jim, this is Tommy Weber.
Hello, Leo. Hey,
Tommy's just been assigned to the office. I'm putting him on a case with you.
Oh, fine, Leo.
Did you see our notice to banks on those counterfeit United Travelers checks?
Yeah.
Well, we got quick action.
Oh?
A man named Paul Clark was arrested this afternoon. He tried to cash these at the Central Trust Company.
Well, these are real good imitations.
They're perfect, except for one thing. The ink doesn't smudge.
You say this Clark was arrested?
Yes, Tommy, but he's just a punk. Here, this teletype just came from Washington with his record.
Thanks, sir. It's a nice record for a 23-year-old.
Mm.
Arrested six times before he was 15.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got two jobs. Find out who the head man is. Find out where the checks are being printed.
Okay. Anybody interview young Clark?
Not yet.
All right, Tommy, county jail's our first stop. Clark's in this room.
Thanks.
Here we are. Just call me when you're through.
Right.
Hello, Clark. I'm a special agent of the FBI. Here are my credentials.
Wow, big shot.
Clark, I want to ask you some questions, but before I do, I want you to know that anything you say can be used against you.
Drop dead.
Look, son, you don't have to prove anything to me, so forget the tough act.
It's no act.
Okay, you're tough. But I'd like to point out that if you cooperate, I'll include that in my report. Maybe the judge will consider it when you come up for sentencing.
I'll never come up for no sentence.
Oh, why not?
My friends will spring me.
What friends?
It's my business.
Clark, you're making a big mistake. Nobody can get you out of this. It's up to you now. Come on, tell me who you're working for, where the checks are printed.
A call for you, Mr. Taylor.
Oh, thanks.
You can take it right there.
Fine, thank you. Hello?
Jim, this is Tommy. I've just gone over what Clark had on him when he was arrested.
Oh, anything interesting?
One airline ticket stub, one book of matches, $310 in cash, one white handkerchief, 10 folders of United Travelers checks.
Did you check that airline stub?
Yeah, Clark got here at 10:30 this morning from Auburn.
Auburn, that's where he was previously arrested.
You get anything from him?
No. He's scared. He talks big, but he's scared. How about that book of matches?
They're from the Hotel America. I called and Clark wasn't registered.
No. Hold on, Tommy, will you? Clark, did you visit anybody at the Hotel America?
No, I was never there.
There were matches from that hotel in your pocket when you were arrested.
Picked them up in a saloon on Wilson Street.
You sure?
Positive. Went there to have a couple of drinks and I bought some butts.
How come you're being so cooperative all of a sudden? Who are you trying to protect?
Nobody.
Yeah, we'll find out. Hello, Tommy.
Yeah, Jim?
Meet me at the Hotel America.
Been waiting long, Jim?
No, I've been busy questioning the hotel employees.
About Clark?
Yeah. No one recognized his picture.
Maybe he just visited here.
Well, if he did, he must have come right from the airport. He was arrested 2 hours after he got off the plane.
Does the airline bus stop here?
No.
Well, then he could have taken a cab from the airport.
Well, we can check black and white. They have an exclusive out there. He might show up on their trip records.
Yeah, let's get over to the cab office.
Oh, wait a minute, Tommy. There's one other angle we should explore.
What's that?
Well, we ought to check with the Auburn police, see if Clark's ever been arrested with a known counterfeiter. I imagine Auburn must keep an album on counterfeiters so we can have that sent on to us, too.
What for?
To show to the employees of the hotel here.
Oh, figuring that Clark came here to see his counterfeiter.
That's right. Now, will you follow through on those requests to the Auburn police?
Sure.
All right, I'll go over to the cab company office.
A case involving a nationwide counterfeiting operation also involves nationwide investigation. At FBI headquarters in Washington, the traveler's checks found on Paul Clark were examined by the lab. At Auburn Police Headquarters, the two requests from your FBI were being acted upon. And at the Black and White Taxi Office, Special Agent Taylor was examining the trip records each cab driver hands in at the end of the day. Examining those trip records, looking for a ride one man took from the airport to the Hotel America.
Mr. Taylor, here's another batch of records.
Oh, thanks. Well, I didn't know there were this many cabs in town.
Only two more bundles.
Thanks very much. Back to work. 12th Street, University, Arena, Oak Road. Pardon me, sir.
Yes?
Slip here says driver 39 made a pickup at the airport at 10:40.
What number?
39. Who would that be?
I'll check for you. 37, 8, 39. Fred Logan, morning shift. He's off till 6 a.m.
Oh, where does he live?
Near here, but he's not home.
How do you know?
He called in. Said he was taking his family to the country.
Oh, did he tell you where?
No.
Will you please leave word for Mr. Logan that I'll meet him here at 6 tomorrow morning? Tommy, I located the right cab driver.
He drove Clark?
Yeah, and he took him to the Hotel America.
Was he alone?
Yeah. Hey, is that from Washington?
Mm-hmm. The lab reported on the traveler's checks Clark tried to cash.
Oh?
They're duplicates of the bad ones that have been passed around the country.
Well, then it's pretty definite that he's part of the ring.
Yeah. We also heard from the Auburn police. Clark's never been arrested with a known counterfeiter.
How about the album?
Be here this afternoon.
Okay, let's call the hotel and ask him to line up the employees for more interviews.
To most people, an album of photographs is a collection of pleasant memories. To a law enforcement officer, an album is a book containing pictures of people arrested for one particular crime. There is a bank robber's album, a confidence man album, and so forth. When Agent Taylor returned to the Hotel America, he had with him the Auburn Police Department's picture collection of 35 men arrested there in the past for counterfeiting.
Good evening.
Hi. Glad to see you back.
Well, thanks. Won't you sit down, please?
Thanks. I'm Rosie, the fourth floor front maid. Remember?
Yes, yes, I do. Rosie, would you look at the pictures in this book for me?
But I told you the other day. I don't know that guy.
No, these are pictures of different people.
Oh, okay.
Well, now, please examine each one carefully and tell me if you recognize anyone who's been a guest here.
Will you look at this bum's kisser? Half these guys couldn't stay here. They don't let you register downstairs by drawing an X. Hey, here's Mr. Franklin.
No, his name is Fisher, Al Fisher.
Five will get you ten. It's Franklin. I never forget a sawbuck tipper.
Franklin?
Yeah, 436.
That's his room?
Yeah, but he's gone.
Oh, when'd he leave?
Yesterday. But don't throw him in the jug, will you? There ain't many $10 tippers left.
Sorry to kept you waiting, Tommy.
What's up?
Oh, I thought we'd interview Paul Clark again. He knows we found out about Al Fisher.
How?
I called the jailer, had him pass the word along. Might soften Clark up. Did you contact the airlines on Fisher?
Yeah, he took a plane back to Auburn yesterday. Leo notified the Auburn police.
If we can get Clark to open up, we might crack this. Go ahead, Tommy.
Thanks.
Hello, Mr. Kimball.
Mr. Taylor, I was just calling you.
Oh, can we see Clark again?
That's what I was calling you about.
Am I giving you trouble?
He's hung himself.
Now back to the FBI file, The Flying Felon.
If you are a parent, it might be well at this point in tonight's case to pause for a moment and think about the young man who has committed suicide. Could that have been your son or daughter? Study yourself and your actions as a parent before you answer. The fact is that there are more than 1.5 million parents in the United States who bewail the news that a child of theirs has gone wrong in a manner so vicious as to demand a penalty ranging from imprisonment in a reformatory to death in an electric chair. From the majority of those parents, you hear nothing but excuses. The child was willful, or got in bad company, or was headstrong, or just seemed to stray from the family group. The fault, in the eyes of those parents, always lies with the child, or with outside influences. The truth is that one of the greatest current contributors to the growing army of criminals is the negligent parent. And that in too many cases, crime, like charity, is beginning at home. Tonight's file continues the following morning at the FBI field office. Special Agents Taylor and Weber have just reported to Supervisor Leo Sherman.
Well, Leo, I guess Clark's death means starting all over again.
Yes, but we've got something to work with. Washington sent us Fisher's complete record.
Oh, good.
He's known to have headed a counterfeit ring in the past. They feel that he's in charge of this one.
But we're still lacking proof.
Yeah.
Well, where do we start?
In Auburn. No counterfeit checks have ever been passed there, so that could be headquarters.
Yeah.
Have we anything to work on there?
Yes. The lab sent a breakdown on the paper the checks are printed on. It's called Stonewood Bond. That paper's available only to print shops.
Have you contacted the company that makes the paper?
Mm-hmm. They're sending a list of their customers in and around Auburn. Excuse me.
Sure.
Sherman.
This is Kimball at the county jail.
Yes, Kimball.
I just got a wire from a funeral parlor in Auburn claiming Paul Clark's body.
Well, who's paying for it?
He didn't say.
When are you shipping the body?
Tonight.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Right.
Bye. That was Kimball at the county jail. A funeral parlor in Auburn asked for Paul Clark's body.
But his record shows he hasn't any family or relatives.
Yeah, that's why I was curious to know who was paying for it. You'd better get up to Auburn and interview that undertaker.
I don't see anyone around, Tommy, do you?
No, and we can't shout for anyone.
Well, let's go back there, see if we can find...
Can I help you, gentlemen?
Yes, are you employed here?
I'm the proprietor.
We're special agents of the FBI. Here are my credentials.
I see. Can I be of service?
Yes, we'd like some information about Paul Clark. I believe you arranged to have his body sent here?
Yes, I did.
At whose request?
Well, I'm afraid I can't answer that.
And why not?
The entire transaction was conducted by messenger.
Well, who paid you?
The messenger brought me a check.
Do you know where this messenger came from?
No, sir, I don't.
Well, do you still have the check?
Yes, I believe I have it in my wallet. Let me see. Yes, here it is.
Thank you. From an outfit called the Ajax Corporation.
What's the signature?
A man named Campbell.
I haven't the slightest idea who that might be.
I see. Thank you for your information, sir.
You're very welcome. If I can be of any further service, let me know.
Thanks again, we will. Come on, Tommy.
Jim, I think you ought to contact the bank. I'll make the rounds of the print shops and see if any of them carry that Stonewood bond.
Okay, let's meet at police headquarters.
A lead can take a special agent directly to the next vital piece of information, or through an endless labyrinth. At the bank, no information was available on the Ajax Corporation. All deposits were made by mail. No one knew Mr. Campbell. The corporation address turned out to be a vacant lot. Who was Mr. Campbell? Maybe the papers of incorporation would tell. At City Hall, more records were combed. The Ajax Corporation turned out to be a dummy company, owned by the Norton Corporation. The Norton Corporation was owned by another firm. Another firm whose president was Al Fisher.
Just a minute.
Hello, Mr. Fisher.
Do I know you?
No, I'm a special agent of the FBI. Here are my credentials.
Oh, come in, come in.
Thank you.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Man named Paul Clark.
Clark? I don't know him.
You're paying for his funeral.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
A check from the Ajax Corporation was sent to a local funeral parlor to cover the expense of Paul Clark's funeral.
And just how does that concern me?
Well, sir, I traced the Ajax Corporation. I found out that it was owned by the Norton Corporation, and the Norton Corporation is owned by the Western Corporation. According to City Hall records, you're the president of Western. Now, do you remember Paul Clark?
I guess I do.
May I ask you why you paid for his funeral?
Sure, I'll tell you the whole story.
That'll be fine.
Paul's my nephew. The reason I held out on him before was, well, I wasn't exactly proud of him.
Because of his police record?
Frankly, yes.
What about yours, Mr. Fisher?
Mine's behind me, Mr. Taylor. I leveled off 3 years ago. I tried to get the kid to do it, too, but he thought he was a lot smarter than me. Well, you see how he ended.
Are you familiar with the charge against him on his last arrest?
No, I'm not.
He was trying to pass counterfeit traveler's checks.
That wasn't smart.
No, it wasn't. Did you know anything about his counterfeiting activities?
Not a thing, Mr. Taylor. Remember, I told you I've been playing it straight.
Yes.
Is there any objection to my burying the boy?
No.
Well, that's why you came here, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
Anything else you want to know?
Not right now, Mr. Fisher. Come in.
Hey, I've been looking all over headquarters for you, Jim.
Oh, the captain just assigned us this room, Tommy.
Well, I came up with a suspect print shop.
Oh, where?
Broadway and 39th Street.
They carry this Stonewood bond?
I don't know.
Well, then what makes them suspect?
Well, before I visited any of the shops, I went to a hotel where Clark used to live.
And?
I checked over their old telephone records and found three of Clark's calls were made to a printer named Nelson.
Oh, and this is his shop, huh?
Yeah. How'd you make out with the check?
Well, after a lot of digging, the Ajax Corporation finally led to Al Fisher. I went over and interviewed him.
What's the story?
He claims he paid for the funeral because Clark was his nephew.
How kind.
He also told me he's a very legitimate man these days.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, did you contact this print shop?
Yeah, they were closed. It won't be open until 3 o'clock.
Leo called. He received what appears to be legitimate information that Fisher is about to start moving another batch of checks that will be passed upstate.
We better set up a surveillance on Fisher.
The police already have. And Leo's coming down, so one of us better stay here.
Well, I'm waiting for a report from the police files here on Nelson, so maybe I'd better stay.
Okay. I'll go out to the print shop.
Afternoon. Can I help you?
Yes, I'd like to order some printing.
We don't handle personal stationery.
No, this is business.
Oh?
Yeah, I'm with an Eastern outfit. We're opening a branch out here. We'll need letterheads, envelopes, order blanks, cash receipts, checks, everything.
I'll have to tell you one thing first. I'll be tied up the next day or two on a big order. So if you're in a rush,
No, we're not. But I'll need some samples of your work.
What for?
Get an okay from the bosses back east.
Oh, sure. Got a few here under the counter.
Fine.
How many do you need?
Well, all you can spare.
Yeah, here you are.
Thanks. I'll give you the order in writing just as soon as I get the green light.
The samples obtained at the print shop were sent to Washington to the FBI crime laboratory. While they were being examined, Supervisor Leo Sherman arrived in Auburn and set up headquarters from which to direct operations.
Well, this is Fisher's apartment house. Now, parking on the hill, Tommy, you can watch both doorways.
Mm-hmm.
We'll call your car fullback. Fisher will be the center. Jim, your car will be tackle.
Okay.
I'm quarterback. This room's the gridiron.
Oh, how about the print shop?
Call it the end zone. Now, if Fisher comes to town, he has to use either the ferry or the bridge.
He's been a bridge man so far.
Well, we can assume he'll keep using it. Now, you follow him all the way, Tommy.
All right.
Now, this side of the bridge, there are five exits.
Well, it'll be tough for the two of us to cover all of them.
Yeah. How about requesting more help from the police?
Now, they're shorthanded for their own work. Let's try to handle this ourselves.
Yeah, wait. There's a different lane on the bridge for each exit.
Okay. The minute Fisher moves into one of them, Tommy, you call in and we'll cover it.
Check.
Any questions?
No. None here.
Okay, then we're set.
Fullback to gridiron.
Come in, fullback.
The center's begun to move.
Where are you?
50 yards behind. Pace is 40 miles an hour.
How's the traffic?
Light. We're 5 miles this side of the bridge. Pace is now 45 miles an hour.
Stay with him. Tackle the fullback.
All clear at this end. The center is a couple hundred yards in front of me.
How far from the bridge?
About a mile. Wait a minute. The railroad gates are coming down across the road. The center's not stopping. I think he'll make it.
Can you?
I don't think so. Oh, there's a train, but he got through. He's gone. Tackle the fullback.
This is fullback. I'm approaching the bridge.
Any sign of the center?
No, and he must have reached here by now. We've lost him.
I've got an idea. You keep coming across the bridge.
Everything ready, Eric?
Most of it.
I told you I wanted everything at 4 o'clock.
Well, I've only got one set of plates.
How many packages can I take now?
Three, over there by the wall.
My car's in the alley out back. Help me move.
Okay.
Keep the others till I get back. You've got room.
Sure.
Car's right by the door.
How long will you be gone?
That depends. Now, wait a minute. I got a free hand.
Can I help you, Fisher?
Huh?
Your bundle of checks seems to be weighing you down.
Mine? Well, they're his. He asked me to help
him. Now, wait a minute. You ordered these
things.
Never
mind. You're both under arrest.
Al Fisher was convicted in federal court for violating the Interstate Transportation of Stolen Property statute and sentenced to federal prison. Eric Nelson, the printer, was convicted of conspiracy and also sentenced to federal prison. In searching the print shop after arresting Al Fisher and the larcenous printer, Supervisor Sherman and Agents Taylor and Weber located the plates which had been used in making the counterfeit traveler's checks. In addition, the package Al Fisher was carrying at the time of his arrest contained more than $100,000 worth of the fake checks. And so a counterfeiting ring was broken up by your FBI. A further contribution to your protection by men who have made that protection their career. The men of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Next week, we will dramatize another case from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Its subject, bank theft. Its title, The Unhappy Embezzler. The incidents used in tonight's Equitable Life Assurance Society's broadcast are adapted from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. However, all names used are fictitious, and any similarity thereof to the names of places or persons, living or dead, is accidental. Tonight, the music was composed and conducted by Frederick Steiner. The author was Jerry D. Lewis. Your narrator was William Woodson, and Special Agent Taylor was played by Stacey Harris. Others in the cast were Fred Clark, Sam Edwards, Joe Forte, Billy Hallop, Bill Johnstone, Blossom McDonald, and Ted Osborne. This Is Your FBI is a Jerry Devine production. This is Larry Keating speaking for the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community, and inviting you to tune in again next week at this same time when the Equitable Life Assurance Society will bring you another thrilling transcribed story from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
And unfortunately, that's where the show just cuts right off. But we got most of it in there, so that was good. This Is Your FBI. Well, now it's time for some comedy, and these two guys are on the theater channel via recording, of course. Abbott and Costello. The show's entitled Sam Shovel, Case of the Russian Diplomat, from 1948.
Hey, Abbott, what time is it?
It's time for the Abbott and Costello Show. We're on the air for ABC here in Hollywood.
Well, what are we waiting for? Let's go with the Abbott and Costello Show.
Yes, it's the Abbott and Costello Show, produced and transcribed in Hollywood for your listening and laughing pleasure. Chuckles with a carload and music by Matty Malnick. So hold on to your chairs, folks, for here they are, Bud Abbott and Lou Costello.
Hey, Abbott!
All right.
Hey, Abbott!
Costello. Here I am.
Hi, Lois. I put you there.
All right. Why are you so late? Why are you late again?
Why am I late again?
Yes.
Well, I've been helping my Uncle Tom Zizimus in his butcher shop in Baltimore. He's having a sale on lamb chops for $4 a pound.
Wait a minute. He sells lamb chops for $4 a pound?
Hmm.
What does he pay for them wholesale?
About 6 cents a piece.
Then what makes the lamb chops so high?
It's them little paper panties. The Garment Workers Union don't work for nothing, you know.
Right. Well, that sock says it. Why are you limping?
Well, when I was coming to the studio tonight, a big dog in the parking lot bit me on the leg.
Costello, that dog might have rabies.
Oh, gee, I hope he does. He'll name one after me.
I... You dummy.
Like little Easter rabies?
Ah, stop, you dummy. Was there ever anybody in your family that wasn't an idiot, Lou?
Oh, sure, my great-grandfather. When George Washington crossed the Delaware, my great-grandfather, Valley Forge Costello, was the first man to jump out of the boat.
He was?
Yes, but Washington made him get back in the boat and go across anyway. He was the 60!
Well, never mind that. What makes you look so tired? Didn't you get any sleep?
Oh, I snored so loud last night I kept waking myself up.
Well, if you snored so loud, why didn't you do something about it?
I did. I moved to another room. Then I dreamed about Marilyn all night long.
By the way, how are you getting along with Marilyn?
We're hitting it off pretty good.
You are?
Yep. I keep putting my head on her shoulder and she keeps hitting it off.
Costello? All right. Costello, why don't you go back with the rest of the baboons?
Okay, any message?
Get them out of here.
Ah, yes, the boys are on the beam tonight. And they'll be back on it in just about 1 minute. But first, let's hear this.
The best things in life may be free. The moon, the sun, a rare day in June, the right summer. But one best thing in life costs quite a few greenbacks. It's a home of your own. And that's exactly what seven couples have an opportunity to win this evening when they go for the house. Go for the House is the wonderful show on which contestants can win a beautiful new honeymoon house of their own. Each Thursday night, MC John Reed King calls seven couples up to the ABC microphone. Each couple selects a room of honeymoon house to furnish. And as they answer each of seven questions correctly, a different prize goes into the house. After the third question, they can take their prizes or go for the house. If they answer their seventh question, they win the honeymoon house. For a show filled with 30 minutes of excitement and suspense, don't miss Go for the House this evening over most of these same ABC stations. And now back to ABC's Abbott and Costello Show.
Why are you doing that rubber doll? What are you doing with that rubber doll?
It's a present for my sister's baby, Tony. He's 1 year old today.
Has the baby learned to walk yet?
Abbott, the kid is only 1 year old. He only learned how to drive the car last week.
What's the baby's name?
It's my sister's fifth baby, and she named it Ming Toy Lotus Blossom.
Ming Toy Lotus Blossom?
Mm.
Why did she name the child that?
She read in a big book that every fifth child born is a Chinese.
What is your sister's husband doing now?
What's he doing now? He had a little filling station. And what a filling station. But they picketed him and closed him up. Now he's opened a skunk farm.
A skunk farm?
Mm-hmm.
A skunk farm?
He figures that's one business the union won't stick their nose in.
You know, I haven't seen your brother-in-law in a long time. How is he, Lou?
You wouldn't know him, Abbott. The sands of time have changed his face.
Well, he's only a young guy. How could the sands of time change his face, Costello?
My sister belted him in a puss with an hourglass.
Where are your sister and husband
he
living now?
He now has granulated eyelids.
Yeah. Lou, where are your sister and husband living now?
I'll let you know in a second here. In the middle of the page. They're living in Pasadena, and boy, is that a ritzy town.
Oh, no, it's not so ritzy.
Yeah, but Pasadena's so high class that they stop all the tourists at the city limit and make them rent mink coats before they can drive through town.
No, I don't believe it.
I know.
Stop, I don't believe that.
I
don't believe it.
You don't believe it?
No, I don't.
My brother Pat used to drive a truck for the city of Pasadena. He told me that all the garbage he picked up was gift wrapped.
You mean your brother Pat drives a garbage truck?
Oh, he's just doing that until he gets his new invention on the market. His invention will change the whole toothbrush industry.
What is it?
A tooth on a stick to clean brushes.
Costello, let's face it. Your brother is nothing but a bum.
I beg your pardon?
I said your brother is nothing but a bum.
Abbott, that's why I can't sleep at night. Thinking what a bum my brother Pat is.
Well, if you can't sleep, why didn't you count sheep?
I did. Once I counted the 10,000 sheep. I was just ready to fall asleep when along came a black sheep, and I got to thinking what a bum my brother Pat is, and I couldn't sleep the rest of the night.
Costello, with all the thousands of people that have no place to live and are looking for vacancies, how can you walk around with a big empty head like that?
Show me in the script where it says anything like that.
Oh, wait a minute. I can tell a joke. I'm a pretty good showman.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You tell a joke like P.T. Barnum.
P.T. Barnum is dead.
You keep telling those kind of jokes, you'll join him.
I don't know. I don't know about that, Lou. My wife always laughs at my jokes. Did you ever notice those little crow's feet around her eyes? Those are from laughing at my jokes.
If those are crow's feet around your wife's eyes, uh-huh, the crows that made them must have been wearing baseball shoes.
How can you say that? My wife, Betty, has a beautiful face.
She's got an automobile face.
Well, what's an automobile face?
As soon as she gets the jack, she ought to have it lifted.
My wife is okay. And you'd better be off if you found a nice home. Well, you'd be much better off, Lou, if you found a nice home with a loving girl and got married yourself.
Do you know where you're at?
No. I don't. But my wife is okay. You'd be better off if you found a nice home, loving girl.
I'm lost myself now.
are mine.
Have you got your place?
Have you got yours?
Oh, yes.
Let's go.
Let's go from scratch. My wife is okay. You'd be better off if you found a nice, home-loving girl and got married yourself.
Well, we gave you enough time to rehearse.
That's right.
I had a home-loving girl, and I had to get rid of her.
Why?
When I wasn't around, she was home-loving some other guy.
Well, you should go out more and meet some nice girls.
I'm going out tonight. There's going to be 26 girls at this party. I'm going to kiss every one of them.
Now, that's the trouble with you. You have no manners. Now, when there are 26 girls at a party and you talk about kissing every one of them, remember, one dozen.
One dozen?
No.
Well, tell me which one it is, and I'll cross her off my list. You get it?
No, I didn't get it.
They are lost where we were before.
Costello, you should be satisfied with one girl. Don't you know one girl that you like better than the rest?
Oh, yeah, but I saw one a day that I could really go for.
Well, why don't you propose to her?
Propose to her?
Yeah.
How dare you say that to me?
Well, your father proposed to your mother.
Yes, she was my mother, but this girl is a total stranger.
Well, why don't you start courting her?
I did. I sent her some orchids.
Not orchids.
It says here, orchids.
No, not orchids. Orchids. Kids,
orchids.
kids.
Oh, sure. Probably after we're married.
No. No, you dummy. You don't get the girl with orchids. You get her with orchids. Kids.
Just a minute. Where am I getting all these kids? I ain't even married yet.
You talk sense. I'm talking about orchids. Orchids are raised in a nursery.
Your kids might have been raised in a nursery, but our kids are going to be raised at home.
No. You don't understand. I'm talking about orchids. We have orchids at home. They're potted.
They take after you, don't they?
Pardon me, Mr. Costello. Do you mind if I make an announcement?
This is Abbott's nephew, folks, and any statement that he makes does not necessarily reflect the views of a human being.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Norman. Make your announcement.
Ladies and gentlemen, starting next Monday, I will be available to the public as a babysitter.
You can always tell an Abbott, can't you? Huh?
Again, please? I say, ladies and gentlemen, starting next Monday, I will be available to the public as a babysitter. I thank you.
Just a minute, Norman. How can you be a babysitter? The only job you ever had was tying up bundles in a department store. How could you be a babysitter?
It's the same thing, wrapping and unwrapping, wrapping and unwrapping.
Hey, that.
Well, hello, boys.
Hello.
Oh,
hello, Viola Vaughn.
Viola Vaughn, Lou.
Boy, I'm glad you showed up early, Viola. Tonight I'm going to sing a song just for you.
Why, Costello, I didn't know you sang.
Oh, I got a high voice. I can hit a high U above T.
Hi, you.
Fine, thanks. Hi, you.
Pay no attention to him, Viola. Pay no attention to him. Why don't you and I have a bite of supper after the show, huh?
Well,
just a minute, Viola. I hired you. Don't you think you should go out with me, kid?
Please, Mr. Costello, I'll decide who I want to go out with.
Well, that suits me. Make your own choice. I won't try to help you in any shape or form.
With your shape and form, nothing will help you.
Oh, that was awfully clever, Abbott.
Oh, yeah. You know, Viola, Abbott is practicing up for television.
Well, why would Mr. Abbott want to be on television?
It's the only way he can get in every bar in town at once. Well, Abbott, I think we both struck out. Now you tell one.
Well, I'll have a try at it. Did you boys know that my uncle is in the hospital?
No, Viola. Tell us what happened.
Well, my uncle was watching two men hoisting a piano into the fifth floor window of a hotel.
Take that again.
Well, I said my uncle was watching two men hoisting a piano into the fifth floor window of a hotel. He was standing underneath them yelling, "Heave ho! Heave ho!"
But wait a minute now. How did he get into the hospital?
They thought he said, "Leave go."
Let's give this kid $6 silver and a box of Snickers.
Lou, you're not mad at me just because I told a little joke.
Well, I...
Oh, come here and let me put my arms around you.
No.
There. Just rest your head on my shoulder. And I'll hold you close now. Would you mind if I ran my fingers through your hair?
viola, I wouldn't care if you walked through it in your bare feet. Viola, when you hold me like this, I get an aching feeling in my chest.
Is it love?
You're pressing against my elk's tooth.
I'll get him out of here.
And as the plot thickens, we'll ring down the curtain on the nonsense just long enough to bring you this message. How much do you think crime cost the citizens of the United States last year? According to figures gathered from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the answer is more than $100 million. This alarming fact is one of many revealed to listeners of This Is Your FBI, broadcast over most of these ABC stations each Friday night. The purpose of bringing facts like this to the attention of Americans is to spotlight dramatically how crime affects each of us and to explain how the individual can guard himself against methods used by lawbreakers. Further, the program, which is the only network show produced with the full cooperation of the FBI, presents an authentic action-filled drama which drives home an important lesson. Yes, for exciting drama, plus hints helpful to the protection of your family, be sure to listen to the official This Is Your FBI tomorrow night when it's on the air over most of these ABC stations. And now back to ABC's Abbott and Costello Show.
Now the spotlight turns to Hal Winters, our singing star. Here he is with Matty Malnick and his orchestra.
Brush those tears from your eyes and try to realize that the ache in my heart is for you. Brush those tears from your eyes and try to realize that from now on I'll always be true. I went away, but I didn't mean to stay, and I will regret it until my dying day. Brush those tears from your eyes and try to realize that the ache in my heart is for you.
Brush those tears from your eyes and try to realize
that the ache in my heart is for you.
Brush those tears from your eyes and try to realize
that from now on I'll always be true. I went away, but I didn't mean to stay, and I will regret it until my dying day.
Brush those tears from your eyes and try to realize
that the ache in my heart is for you. But I didn't mean to stay, and I will regret it until my dying day. Brush those tears from your eyes and try to realize that the ache in my heart is for you.
All right, Costello, come out here. What's that you have in your hand?
It's a picture of my grandfather, General Stonewall Costello. What a hero, Abbott. He fought in the Spanish-American War. Every time he went off to battle, all the girls in Patterson would line up to kiss him goodbye.
Wait a minute. Every time he went to battle, all the girls in Patterson kissed him goodbye?
Yes. The war ended in 1898. But they couldn't get Grandpa to stop fighting till 1935.
He must have been some fighter.
Yes, he taught me to fight. I became quite a boxer. I remember my first fight. In the third round, my manager threw the towel in and I won.
Well, wait a minute. How could you win if your manager threw in the towel?
He threw it over my opponent's eyes.
You dummy, you're no fighter. You're not an athlete. There's not an athlete in your whole family.
Oh, yes, there is. My brother Pettis is a famous athlete. Just last week, he pitched a no-hit game.
Oh, well, lots of guys have pitched no-hit games.
In football?
Costello, you and your brother Pat are the dopiest guys in the world.
Yes, there ain't nobody a dopier than him and me.
Well, now, that's incorrect. You should say there's nobody dopier than he and I.
Okay, there's nobody a dopier than him and you.
Well, never mind that. How's Pat getting along with his new girl?
Oh, well, for a while, he had it pretty tough. Every time Pat went over to see her, her brother would throw him out of the house. Last week, her brother went away to college, and things are different.
What do you mean?
Now her father throws him out of the house.
Is Pat working?
Oh, yes. He's got a job at a milk company, and he works like a horse.
What does he do?
He pulls one of the wagons.
Stello.
What do you want, Norman?
Are you going to do another one of them Sam Shovel misery programs tonight?
Look, Norman, look at the script. That's mystery.
I listen to the show, brother. It's misery.
Abbott, if you don't keep that nephew out of here, I'm going to flatten him. I'll hit him in the head so hard that his shoes will have three tongues.
I'll lay off. Well, enough of this nonsense, Costello. What does your Sam Shovel detective story about tonight?
It's one of my greatest cases, Abbott. I call it the case of the Russian diplomat who took the 6 p.m. boat back to Russia, or Red Sails in the Sunset.
Well, it sounds interesting. Let's get on with the case.
Fair enough. Yeah, I'm Sam Shovel. Sam Shovel, private detective. The detective business has been lousy lately. I ain't got a nickel to my name. I guess it's just as well. How would it sound if people called me Sam Shovel Nickel? Last night, somebody ransacked my office. They went over it with a fine tooth comb. I know they went over it with a fine tooth comb because this morning when I came in, the horsehair sofa had a part in it. I'm so mad I can see red.
Hi, Sam.
Hi, Red. In the office across the court, I see the beautiful stenographer combing her hair. She just combed out her bangs. I'm a little thirsty. I think I'll have some orange juice. I squeeze my orange juice the hard way. The hard way. I place the orange in my mouth, stick my head in the doorway, and slowly close the door. On my way to the office, I found a woman's handbag. I wonder what's in it. I decide to empty the contents on my desk. That takes care of the change purse. I wonder what's in the bag. I look at my appointment book. I see that tonight I have a date with a gorgeous peach. I think I'll break it and make a date with a girl. I glance down at my desk. There's one of my old business cards. Sam Shovel, FBI. Fat, busy, ignoramus. The printer made a mistake. I haven't been busy in years. I look out the window. In the garage across the street, the mechanic is working on a car.
On your mark, get set, go!
No matter what car comes in, he always races the motor. Coming up the street, I see my pal, Lieutenant Abbott of the Homicide Squad. What a cop. Whenever the police department makes a raid, Lieutenant Abbott is a spearhead. Not that he's so brave, but he's the only cop in the department with a head like a spear. Abbott is a quiet cop. Every Sunday, he sits home and listens to the radio. He's trying to win the jackpot on Stop the Music. He's trying to win it the hard way. The hard way. He has no telephone. It's a chilly day, and I've got a fire going in the kitchenette of my little office. There's a kettle boiling on the stove.
Hello, Sam Shovel. What's that smell coming from your kitchenette?
It's my washing.
I thought it smelled too good to be your cooking. I'm mighty tired, Sam.
So are your jokes.
I'm really tired. I just been out on a wild goose chase.
What were you chasing?
A wild goose.
Lieutenant Abbott used to be a comedian. Tried to make a living. He tried to make a living with his monkey shines. He had to give it up.
There's no money in shining monkeys. Lieutenant Abbott, I've got bad news for you. Your cook was picked up this morning for passing a bad check.
Whose check was it?
Yours.
That's not funny, Sam Shovel. You weren't a friend of mine, I'd punch you in the nose.
I knew Lieutenant Abbott was only bluffing. He couldn't punch his way out of a paper bag. Don't worry him. After all, how often do you get stuck in a paper bag?
Oh, wait a minute. Cut the small town talk, Sam. Lefty Lumphead is in town and he's gunning for you.
I know that, Lieutenant. I've already notified the police. They've thrown a net over the city. I'll call headquarters and see how they're making out. Hello, Chief.
Yes?
This is Sam Shovel. Have you got that net out for Lefty Lumphead?
Yes.
How's the net working? Did you catch Lefty yet?
No, the net's working fine. Already we've caught 3 butterflies.
Sam, this is serious.
No matter what you give Abbott's nephew, nothing happened.
But Sam... Sam, this is really serious. Lefty Lumphead is a killer. He's out to get you. He may be on his way here now. And I know you're afraid of him.
Me? Afraid of Lefty Lumphead? Pish, tush. I'd like to see the day I'd be afraid of him.
Hello, Sam.
This is the day. Before me stood the toughest killer on the coast. When he was 8 years old, he shot his father and mother. Then he asked the judge for mercy on the grounds that he was an orphan. What a tough mug. He's got cauliflower ears. Never was a fighter. It's just that his ears was made out of cauliflower. I noticed Lieutenant Abbott's hand reach for his holster. Abbott's gun barked.
Okay, coppers. I got you covered. Sam Shovel, I got one bullet in this gun. It's for you. I'm going to give you a break, Sam. I'll put that bullet wherever you say.
If it's all the same to you, put it in Lieutenant Abbott.
You're pretty clever, Lefty Lumphead. You're one of the smartest burglars in the business, but there's something I want to ask you.
Huh?
How is it you've never been caught robbing a house?
It's easy. It's easy. I only rob houses on Thursday nights.
Why did you pick Thursday nights?
Because Abbott and Costello are on the air Thursday nights, and brother, when they're on the air, nobody stays home.
Lefty, that's a lie. Abbott and Costello are on right now. I'll prove it's a lie by checking with the police department. Hello, police department. Can you tell me...
We ain't got time to talk to you now.
Why?
Every house in town is being robbed.
I had taken all I could stand from that killer. Quick as a flash, I pulled my gun.
Sam, Lefty is seriously wounded. Your bullet went through his shoulder.
Call the hospital.
What have you done? What have you done? Sam Shovel, you shot my boyfriend.
Lefty's girl, the most gorgeous mall in the underworld. She's beautiful.
Look, he's bleeding.
Call the hospital.
He's the only boyfriend I've got, and he's liable to die.
Call the hospital.
If he dies, who's going to love me and squeeze me and kiss me?
Call the morgue.
Keep the house lights down, boys. We'll have a curtain call from Abbott and Costello after a final reminder on this subject.
One day, a little man who was quite a big guy in the underworld decided to turn over the proverbial new leaf. He thought to himself, this life outside the law won't get me anything but a nice long jail sentence. So this tiny, tough character took the bull by the horns. From safecracker par excellence, he turned sleuth par excellence. Know his name? Sure, it's Little Herman. That captivating character who entertains you with exciting adventure every Saturday night over most of these same ABC stations. Little Herman's never regretted his step, for it was one in the right direction, the direction of law and order. As for excitement, there is nothing lacking in the life of Little Herman. Because he knows the underworld, he's of invaluable help to the law. As Little Herman says, it takes a crook to catch a crook. So don't miss Little Herman on the air Saturday night over most ABC stations. And now back for a final word from ABC's Abbott and Costello Show.
Hello,
Costello. You sure worked hard tonight.
Yep, but you know my motto. Hard work never hurt anybody. That's what I keep telling the people that do my work.
Well, you should thank... You should thank the people that do your work.
I'm going to do that right now, Abbott. That's First, what? I want to thank our writing staff, headed by Eddie Foreman, with Paul Conlon, Pat Costello...
Wait a minute. And our band leader, Matty Melnick.
You're right. And let's not forget our producer, Charles Vander. See you next Thursday night, folks.
Good night, folks.
Good night to everybody in Patterson. Good night!
Listen each Thursday night at this time for another great Abbott and Costello show, produced and transcribed in Hollywood. Be sure to stay tuned for the outstanding entertainment which follows throughout the evening on this ABC station. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company. 8 o'clock at KECA, AM and FM, Los Angeles.
Our time for this week has expired, but there'll be another program coming up next week, and I hope you can join us then.